the people have spoken, and Jeff Ross has returned for Roast Battle 2. The four-night event features top comedians getting verbally violent until just one is left standing. Featuring a star-studded lineup of judges, including Snoop Dogg, Sarah Silverman, and Jason Sudeikis, this is a battle you don't want to miss. The four-night event begins tonight at 9 Central on Comedy Central. And don't miss the live finale on Sunday, January 29th at 9 Central to see who gets crowned the king or queen of cruelty. Welcome to the Ringer NBA Show. I'm Chris Varner. Joining me today from Yahoo's The Vertical and NBA analyst for CSN New England. Andy does boxing. Andy's got a radio show on NBC Sports Radio. He's the man of a million jobs. Chris Mannix joining me. What's up, Chris?
I got a million jobs, Chris, and I sit around most days walking around in, like, gym shorts. It's pathetic.
No, that's good. That's good. If you can get a bunch of jobs and dress the way you want to. So, massive story coming out today. You and Adrian Wojnarowski co-wrote for Yahoo's The Vertical a story about Carmelo Anthony. It seemed like last night the articles were coming out that we have reached a breaking point with Carmelo Anthony and the New York Knicks. And now you guys forward that story. And it appears as if it is not a matter of if, it is a matter of when Carmelo Anthony is moving on, because they're already talking to teams?
Yeah, my lay of the land is that the Knicks have engaged several teams in Carmelo Anthony trade talks. ESPN reported yesterday that the Cavaliers were approached. I was told expressly that, you know, while, you know, that those conversations have happened, they didn't go anywhere. It's a dead issue, and the Cavaliers are no longer in the mix. The teams to keep your eye on over these next couple of weeks are the LA Clippers and the Boston Celtics. The Clippers, they know where they're at right now. They're not as good as the upper tier teams in the Western Conference, specifically Golden State, and maybe even San Antonio, Houston as well. They would love to add Carmelo Anthony to their core without giving up any of their core. That's what makes a trade like that so difficult. But they've been approached and they've been talked to, and those discussions, I've been told, are ongoing. And the Boston Celtics, you know, look, they've got a lot of young assets, not just young players, but the draft picks, the two Brooklyn picks they'll have over the next couple of years. They've got multiple other picks from other teams over the next couple of years. They internally, I've been told, like Carmelo a lot. The coaching staff likes Carmelo a lot and would think he'd be a good fit alongside Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford. Like, will Danny Ainge give up real assets in terms of high-level draft pick to get Carmelo Anthony? That remains to be seen. So, you know, the Knicks are it certainly seems to me, Chris, that the Knicks are, you know, not just proactive, but incredibly aggressive right now in trying to find a deal for Carmelo Anthony. And I also think Carmelo's on board with this. I can't imagine a situation where the Knicks are doing this kind of legwork and they don't have at least Carmelo's tacit approval to have conversations with the Celtics, the Clippers, and the Cavaliers. That would make no sense to me. So it seems like everybody there is on the same page.
Do you think he would waive his no trade for any of those teams?
I do. You know, just because they wouldn't be this deep in. I mean, I think the Clippers, we've been discussing them in the past. His affinity for Chris Paul is well known. He goes to L.A., it's a great market. He'd have a chance to compete for a championship right away. It makes a lot of sense. Boston might be a little bit of a tougher sell, you know, just because the Celtics, even with Melo, what are they? Are they a real championship contender? Maybe, depending on what they have to give up. So that might be a little bit of a tougher sell, but I still think he'd sign up on that. I mean, Boston, it's such a great sports town, and it's such a great Celtics town. I mean, last night, the Rockets game, I mean, that building was rocking. You could tell right just watching off television. It's like that out there, you know, every game of the season. So I think Carmelo, if he can just, you know, come to grips with the idea of leaving New York for Boston, would really fit in well with the Celtics and be embraced by that town.
Okay, well, let me get first to the Clippers, because one of the things you mentioned is they would like to be able to attain Carmelo without getting rid of any of their core. Presumably that means Paul, Jordan, and Griffin. They don't have anything else. Like, what? What are they giving up?
Yeah. Well, they have to include Austin Rivers in any package like that. He's the only player that has youth and real value on any level to that team. But the rest of it is just, I mean, it's spare parts, really.
They're good, so they don't have a pick that would be worthy. Like, the Celtics are good, no. And they have picks in the kitty, whereas, you know, you get a Clippers pick, so what? It's a late pick, and, I mean, really, Austin Rivers is going to be the centerpiece of a deal that nets you Carmelo Anthony? Like, I can't see that.
No, and the Knicks right now, they can't see it either. I mean, they're looking to get young players, real value back in return, something that's going to help them. Not this year necessarily, but long term. And look at even the Clippers draft picks. I mean, their draft situation, they owe a bunch of picks out there. They owe Toronto a pick at some point in the next couple of years. They don't have draft capital to deal either. So the Clippers, unless they get on board with the idea of trading one of that core four, I'm not sure a deal like that works out.
Okay, how can Ainge? What kind of deal could Ainge put together? Because he's got all of these assets, but which of the young guys do you think they would be willing to get off? Is it, I can't imagine it would be Avery Bradley, but maybe, is it Marcus Smart? I wouldn't think they would move off of Jaylen Brown, but I mean, what outside of a pick, what kind of players do you think could be put together that would make sense on the Knicks side?
Well, I think it's Marcus Smart and Jay Crowder are the two guys that would headline a potential deal like that. Boston has to break up that backcourt at some point. In 2018, all three of the guards you mentioned, including Isaiah Thomas, are up for contracts. And some of them, like Isaiah and Avery Bradley, might be extended this summer. Isaiah Thomas is a $100 million-plus player. Avery Bradley is a $100 million-plus player on the free agent market. Marcus Smart, who knows what he could be in line for, but if he plays well the next year and a half, you could be looking at a fourth-year max type of contract in the $60, $70 million range. You're just not paying three guards that much money. So Marcus Smart, to me, would make the most sense. The Knicks are going to lose Derrick Rose this offseason because, you know, they want to, and Marcus could plug into that point guard spot. You could play him 30, 35 minutes and have him become part of that young core with Kristaps Porzingis. And Crowder, you've heard Phil Jackson say in the past, Chris, that Crowder was a guy that he missed on. When he was making that deal involving Tyson Chandler, he missed on the opportunity to sign or to get Jay Crowder back in return. He said it's his biggest mistake as an executive with the Knicks. I think he'd welcome a chance to get Crowder in Boston. But look, you get Carmelo, and all of a sudden you don't need a small forward not that much anymore. They would move on, I think, from him as well.
Would you do that if you're Boston? Would you move off of Smart and Crowder if it meant you could get Carmelo?
I would. I would. Anything after that, we'd have to really discuss. I wouldn't go anywhere near those two Brooklyn picks. Brooklyn's going to be the worst team in the league by far this year, and who knows where the ping pong balls go, but that's probably a top three pick, maybe the number one overall pick. And as you know, this is a loaded draft this year. It's loaded with point guards, and Boston might need to make a deal to get out of that top spot to get something back in return, but it is a high-quality draft at the top this year. You don't want to deal out of that spot, but the other picks they have, their future picks, the picks they've acquired over the years from other teams, those might be in play, but I would be very, very cautious in dealing more than that.
So then you would have theoretically, a four-man lineup of Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Carmelo Anthony, and Al Horford. Who's the fifth guy that plays with them if you've moved off of Crowder?
Well, I mean, I think you're still looking at an Amir Johnson and moving Al to the power forward kind of full-time. When you can. I mean, I had Al Horford on my podcast recently, and, I asked him straight up, like, are you a center? Because you're defined as a center everywhere you go. And he said, no way, I'm not a center. He doesn't want to be a five-man. He doesn't feel like physically that's the best matchup for him. And I think Boston's also going to be proactive in trying to pursue one of those lesser bigs out there. I mean, Andrew Bogut is available. Jusuf Nurkic in Denver is available. Kostas Koufos in Sacramento is available. These aren't sexy names per se, but they will give you a physical presence to play alongside an Al Horford. And if you look at Boston's biggest weakness, it's not having that big man. I mean, they are getting destroyed on the boards. Their defense has suffered immeasurably because of it. They badly need another big to play alongside Horford. So I wouldn't just say if they can make this deal, and again, it's a long way off, but if they can make this deal, I wouldn't expect that to be the last deal they make.
And I think it's interesting, obviously you're super plugged into what's going on in Boston. You had mentioned in passing earlier that the coaching staff in Boston would be on board, that they are fans of Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, that's what I've been told, that they're fans. And more to the point, Chris, they understand where their weakness is at. And they understand that as great as Isaiah Thomas has been in the fourth quarter, you know, not just like the best in the league this year, but historically great over the last 20 years, you get to the playoffs, you've got to have a second option. You've got to have some help there for him to play off him. Somebody that can make shots consistently and create his own offense. They don't have that right now. Jay Crowder is one of the best value players in the league. His contract is great, and what he does defensively is great, and he makes shots sometimes on that team. But if you can switch Jay Crowder and Carmelo, it's hard to argue that you're not a better team for it.
I was one of those. Listen, we just did the podcast on Tuesday. I did it with Kevin O'Connor, and I was on board with the Celtics making a move for Carmelo. And I said, I don't know, you know, if it moves the needle to where they would knock off Cleveland, but I could 100%, if they made that deal, I could foresee a game 7 in Cleveland, you know, where they could take them to the brink. And I would certainly, if they could make that move, would certainly have them in the Eastern Conference Finals. And at that point, then, you know, all bets are off. You never know, as long as you can get there. But I do think that they would then become the favorite to meet Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I don't know if that's so right now.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, sure. But I would caution to say that I think the Etch-a-Sketch is going to be shaken up pretty good over the next month or so. I don't think Cleveland gets a player at the trade deadline. They just don't have the assets. But I get a sense there could be a run on bought-out veterans after that trade deadline who could become incredibly valuable to the Cavaliers. I mean, Deron Williams, could he be bought out in Dallas? Rajon Rondo in Chicago? Even Derrick Rose. It could come to that with Derrick Rose and the New York Knicks if they trade Carmelo and just kind of go all in on a full rebuilding effort and really don't care that much about wins and losses in the aftermath of that. Derrick Rose could wind up on that buyout market. So if the Cavaliers get one of those guys, that's going to improve their team a lot. In addition, Toronto, I don't know how Masai Ujiri out there is not incredibly aggressive over the next few weeks, especially when it comes to Paul Millsap. You watch the way Cleveland's playing right now, and that they're vulnerable. They're there. They're there, not maybe for the taking, but if you improve that Raptors team, you put yourself in a great position. Millsap is just what the doctor ordered for that team. I know they want to hold on to some of their young players, specifically Terrence Ross and Norman Powell, but Kyle Lowry is going to be 31 years old in about a month. The time is now. The window is open right now. They've got to treat this with more of a sense of urgency and go out and get that impact player.
How about LeBron's very public GMing? What do we make of it?
Well, you know, it's almost like, and I hate to get like sort of political, but it's almost like Donald Trump saying something, then you ask the follow-up, well, how are you going to do it? There's really no way that the Cavaliers can get significantly better via trade. You know, LeBron has admitted that, you know, Dellavedova was a tough re-sign. I mean, he's getting a lot of money, and that would have absolutely exploded the Cavaliers' luxury tax penalties. They paid $50 million in luxury tax penalties alone last year, and they're on pace to right around $30 million in tax penalties this year. So he knows they got totally screwed by Mo Williams, who retired abruptly right before the season started. But I think he also knows that DeAndre Liggins is not fetching you back something real in a trade. Kay Felder is not getting you back something real in a trade. This team has spent all its cash and all its capital on keeping their stars intact and their stars well paid. That's fine. But this is the byproduct of it. This is the price you pay if you're the Cavaliers. You don't have great depth. You don't have the assets to go and acquire that. So, you know, it's sort of bizarre for LeBron to be out there saying this team needs to improve. But he knows. He's a smart guy. He knows that there really isn't a legitimate path to do it.
Okay, well, then Griffin kind of, I don't want to say fires back, but when asked about it, he's got to speak on it. And he says, this team's good enough to win a championship as it is. Which I think most people believe, right? Or no?
Yeah, no, I think they believe it. And and look, they did get better a couple of weeks ago. Kyle Korver makes them better. Kyle Korver on that team is better than Mike Dunleavy on that team. Kyle Korver is a bona fide elite three-point shooter, whereas Mike Dunleavy right now is not. So they're better. And I think LeBron just kind of has to, you know, just keep it quiet for a couple of weeks and see what happens after the February trade deadline. See what happens when the Deron Williams of the world and the Rondos hit the trade market, because then, Chris, then it's on him. then he has to go out there and be the college-style recruiter and try to get these guys to commit to coming to a place where there'll be a backup instead of going someplace where they can get big minutes and get ready for another contract.
So you think that's how the Cavs attain the players that they will inevitably attain? That it will be... it's not going to be a trade.
I don't think there's any way to do it. I mean, you know, show me a scenario. I mean, I know home fans often overvalue, their own assets. But even Cleveland fans can't, point to Kay Felder, and Kay Felder should get me Darren Williams, or DeAndre Liggins should get me this. I mean, Channing Frye is not going to net you back something real. Richard Sheffield is not going to net you back something real. You're not in a great position to make any type of legitimate trade, and they're going to have to wait until that deadline passes.
Well, it's crazy, too, because when the Cleveland stuff came up with, like, Carmelo, it's like, okay, for what? Like, the only thing they could feasibly give up is Kevin Love, and they ain't giving up Kevin Love.
No, they're not. I mean, the Kevin Love trade rumors are never going to die. I think Kevin has done a great job at just kind of accepting them. I mean, I think it helps when you get yourself a championship ring, you get yourself a max contract, and you're having yourself a great year. So, he's in a good position, but you're going to trade Kevin Love for Carmelo. How does that really help you? None of the deals that are kind of trade machine type of deals make any sense for the Cavaliers. So I don't expect anything significant to happen with them over the next few weeks.
How about what's going on in Chicago? I mean, we're reaching that point in the season, and I said this a couple of days ago, where it's like, all right, I'm not going to make any sweeping judgments. You see all these teams going through it. Toronto's lost 5 games in a row. LeBron's coming out after the game saying, we need an effing playmaker. I mean, there's just this level of frustration, and I think you could fill in probably 10 different teams and have the conversation, what's wrong with blank, right?
Right.
And so, but the big frustration, at least last night, was out of Dwayne Wade, who seemed like he reached the breaking point with his Chicago Bulls team and basically said, I know Jimmy's doing his job and he's bringing everything to the table, but there's a lot of guys on this team that basically the losing doesn't hurt. And so Wade was out in the forefront last night. I mean, it's everybody taking a turn with being disgusted with their team's performances. But what do you make of Wade last night? Becoming demonstrative wholeheartedly for the first time.
Well, I think it was calculated, because not only did Wade say something, but Jimmy Butler stepped up and he said kind of the same thing. And with the two of them in the locker room, both saying the same thing at roughly the same time, the message is amplified and the message is stronger to the rest of the Bulls players. But this again comes back to what were the expectations here? I mean, look, we in the media, generally speaking, we know nothing. I mean, we speculate on stuff, but I understand that there are machinations and inner workings of a team that I'm not privy to that affect the team more than I really understand. But the Bulls, this year, you look at the Bulls, you say, that team can't shoot. That team should not have signed Rajon Rondo. This is a case where the media and everyone that looks at the Bulls and said they're not going to be very good was exactly right. Now, we didn't anticipate Nikola Mirotic not having a productive season or continuing to build on his success over the last couple of years. Doug McDermott, the concussions, that's affected his ability to stay in the rotation. But by and large, this team has been bad for the reasons we thought they'd be bad. They're not a very good ball movement team. They're not a very good three-point shooting team. They can't play the style that Fred Hoiberg wants to play, and that's really been a big reason for their problems.
Is he the first to go? We are more than halfway through the season for every team. They've all played over 41 games. Do you think? But we have not had a coach get fired yet. Is Hoiberg the one?
I don't know how Chicago could justify firing him. I mean, they let go of Tom Thibodeau, and they bring in Hoiberg, and he was the hand-picked choice of John Paxson and Gar Forman out there. They didn't interview anybody else. He was the guy with that team. So I don't know how you let him go, at least not until the end of this season, not with the roster that they have put together, because that would be an indictment of what they've done up until this point. I look at the potential firees. I mean, Alvin Gentry has not been fired at this point, and I think part of that is for the same reasons. Del Demps, is he going to get another chance to hire another coach if he fires Alvin Gentry? Earl Watson hasn't worked out in Phoenix, but they're not going to fire him in that first year. There really isn't a potentially fireable coach out there. This might be the first year we've had in a while where you don't see a head coach fired at all during the season.
It might be the first time in forever. Guys get fired every single year, but you do have so many that are new to their job, or at least in the first couple of years of their job.
Yeah, the teams that are bad are supposed to be bad. The Lakers, they want to protect that top three pick. I was in LA last week watching them, basically devolve into a pickup basketball team out there. I mean, it was ugly watching that team, try to play what Luke Walton wants them to play, and even worse defensively. I mean, they are disastrous defensively. Phoenix, wherever they're at, even in the Eastern Conference, the Nets are bad, but nobody had an expectation. The Heat don't care really at this point because they need a young player to become the next big star. I mean, there just isn't a team out there that's really not kind of where they expect to be at this point in the season.
Yeah. How crazy is it what's going on with the Philadelphia 76ers? Now 8-2 in their last 10 games, and you're seeing they even won these last couple without Joel Embiid. I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, and look, I give Brett Brown a lot of credit. I mean, speaking of coaching, I mean, how many of us or how many coaches in the NBA could have survived, 3 years of agonizing losing and get to this point and maintain your sanity to get to this point? I mean, Brett Brown has kept this team positive throughout, has, ridden out a bunch of storms, including the most recent with Nerlens Noel. He's had to battle the front court issues of Okafor, who's been in and out of the rotation. Noel, the same thing. He's got no point guards, really, to speak of at a high caliber. And they're succeeding. And Embiid deserves a lot of credit for it, but I give Brown a ton of it. Now, he's coming out of that San Antonio tree, and starting in after the All-Star break, he's going to get Ben Simmons back as well. This team is really trending in the right direction. They have got the potential not just to be a team fighting for a playoff spot this year, which they really are. They're like five games out right now of the final playoff spot. But next year, they look like a playoff team. And that, when you become that type of team, Chris, that's when you can really start getting free agents. You're not going to get them if you're a bottom-feeding team and say, I've got Joel Embiid, I've got Ben Simmons, we're a good team, come sign with us. You're going to get there if you're a playoff team. And now you're a playoff team. You've got young point guards. You've got young point guards and other players that will want to play there and fill in holes that you have.
I've seen him up close a couple of times already this year, and I thought it was one of the most amazing things in all of sports to watch him coach, because if you just watched him, you would never, ever know that he's lost a million games over the last 3 years. He coaches every possession hard. He is still always teaching. Like, the losing, he's just, I don't want to say immune to it, but it has not beaten him down like it would anybody, including myself. Like, I can't imagine having to go to the pregame press conferences and the postgame press conferences and going in so shorthanded all the time. And he still, you would never know any different. I'm with you on the Brett Brown stuff. He is an amazing case study for what he has been through the last couple of years. And so I like watching him get to win.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It really is to watch him evolve as a coach. I mean, look, I thought, honestly, it was, kind of insulting last year for him to see Mike D'Antoni added to the bench. I mean, if you're Brett Brown and Jerry Colangelo comes in to run the team and later Brian Colangelo is hired to be the GM, and you bring in the coach that had the most success with those guys in Phoenix to be your assistant, I don't know how you have that situation come up and not feel threatened and not kind of let it bother you. But he didn't. He persevered through it. And he has been a just tremendous success. I mean, I think Mike D'Antoni is the coach of the year, hands down. I don't think it's close right now, and I've written that in recent weeks. But Brett Brown, as this team continues to tread upward, he is right there, top three, top four in the conversation.
All right, Mannix, I'm going to ask you about Sam Hinkie next. But first, I want to remind everybody, if you're playing fantasy for money and not spending hours a day doing it, you absolutely should be on Draft. Draft is a simple daily fantasy app. You can do snake drafts just like the ones you do at the beginning of your season-long season. They last for one night, and they only take minutes to complete. On Draft, can play for free, or better yet, play for money. There are no pros, no salary cap, and get this, your chances of winning money on Draft are almost 3 times better than other fantasy sites. Download Draft now. Just search Draft in the App Store, and it'll come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code NBA Show when you download, and you'll get a 100% bonus up to $600 when you deposit. Just search Draft in the App Store, and be sure to enter the promo code NBA Show. All right, Chris, has Sam Hinkie been 100% validated in the process?
It's hard to, the short answer is yes, because Sam Hinkie's vision was to become not just a flash-in-the-pan playoff team fringe contender, but the vision was to become a long-term, you know, title contender for 5, 6, 7 years. And they're not there yet, but they have two potential franchise players in Embiid and Simmons. They might have the Lakers pick if it falls outside the top four. They'll have their own pick, and they have a glut of draft picks thanks to shrewd deals from Hinkie in years to come. So I found the last couple of years of the process to be intolerable, but you can't argue with the results. Here is Philadelphia, exactly where Sam Hinkie wanted them to be. So it's tough to swallow, but yeah, I think he is validated.
Yeah, I think so too. And I wonder if I'm a, you know, if I'm a struggling team and if I'm a struggling organization, do I look and say, look at what he just pulled off? Now, you got to swallow that pill for a long time, but again, we are a results business, right? What results did it yield? And I don't think they nailed everything along the way. They clearly didn't. They didn't nail everything. But they nailed enough to where the future looks extremely bright right now for maybe a long, long time. And we haven't even seen Simmons yet, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and I watched him in Summer League. And look, it is just Summer League, but he dominated Summer League in the same way that LeBron dominated his Summer League. That the great players over the last 20 years have dominated Summer League. He was special. And look, he's going to commit a lot of turnovers. He's not going to be able to make the passes he made in Summer League against real NBA players, but he's going to grow. And his ability to be a point forward, look, I don't know if he's going to be a full-time point guard there, as Brett Brown has kind of listed, but if you can make him your primary playmaker and forget about having a point guard playmaker, get yourself a sharp shooting point guard and have a backcourt loaded with shooters, you are going to create havoc for teams offensively. You are going to be versatile and dangerous every single time down the floor. And that's something that makes Philly's potential really, really high.
Yeah, that's for sure. And who knows? They are, right now, as it stands, if we can imagine this, just given how everybody's all bunched up, they're only 4.5 out of the 8 seed right now.
Yeah, they're right there. And, with Embiid playing like he is. And look, they might make a deal before the deadline. I mean, they've been sort of sniffing around other point guards. Ricky Rubio is on the market. I'm not exactly sure if you're going to play Simmons at point guard, does Rubio help you because he can't shoot? That doesn't really just jive with my mindset there. But you can get him for a certain price from Minnesota. Maybe they can go out and get somebody like that who you can add to the core. They have the potential to upgrade. And look, though, that Eastern Conference Final playoff spot, it's not like anybody is seizing it and kind of holding on to it. The Bulls have it right now, but we see where they're trending. The Pacers, the Hornets, they're all right there, 500 or under. If the Sixers make a run, they might not just get that 8th spot, Chris. They might get higher in that postseason bracket.
How crazy would that be? I mean, to see them. I mean, listen, I know if we could pencil it in right now, how great would it be to see a Sixers-Cleveland first-round series? That would be the best.
Well, I tell you what. I mean, look at, say, the last, 9 teams in the Eastern Conference. I mean, even look at the entire Eastern Conference roster mix. If you're a guy that says, you can buy an NBA team in the Eastern Conference and you can own it for the next 10 years, and if you win championships, that's going to be the end of it. Then you have to sell the team. Who do you buy there? I mean, I guess you buy Cleveland first because LeBron chance to win the next 3, but after that, whose roster and whose future is more appealing than Philadelphia 76ers right now? They have the potential for 10 years to be among the more dominant teams in the East, and that's exactly what Sam Hinkie wanted to do.
I like Milwaukee, too.
I do. A few more holes, though. I mean, they're playing Malcolm Brogdon at point guard. That's
I get you, though. But, Chris, if you give me Jabari and the Greek Freak, I mean, and I know I can keep him, I mean, they're both. I think that, listen, Greek Freak's obviously going to start the All-Star game. I think Jabari Parker's going to be an All-Star. He's close.
Yeah,
this
he's
year.
Got a real shot. He's got a real shot. No
I don't think. I don't think he'll make it this year. But I certainly think in the coming years, Jabari Parker will make All-Star teams.
I agree. But let me ask you this: if you could take right now, and again, there's a lot of unknowns for your core, Jabari and Giannis, or Embiid and Ben Simmons, who do you take?
God, that's unbelievable.
I
want to see Simmons, right? I want to see Simmons first. And
yeah.
God, I hate to even bring up the injuries with Embiid, but it is what it is. You know what I mean? That's been there. You know what I mean? Is Embiid going to give me, you know, am I going to get 75 games out of him, you know, five of the next 6 years? They still got
him. I wouldn't be too worried about it, though, Chris. I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously, it's never going to go away, but we've seen a lot of big men get over this injury. Ilgauskas is an off-sided example, and people point to Yao Ming, but the reason Yao Ming, you know, he declined, it wasn't because of what Houston was doing. It was frigging going back to China and playing all those games and having, you know, people over there not really care that much about maintaining him for the long term. Philadelphia still has Embiid on a minutes restriction this year when he probably doesn't need to be really anymore. They're going to be incredibly cautious with him every offseason. They're going to treat it as well as they possibly can. I understand the fear of Embiid having recurrence, but it doesn't terrify me, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, and to your point, you know, a 31-year-old Marc Gasol has come back from, you know, a serious foot injury last year and is playing the best basketball of his life.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And Gasol is a far more lumbering player than Embiid is. He's more of a fluid, kind of versatile, run-the-floor type guy. I think he's okay. I think having gotten over, you know, the first half of the season and not had a recurrence, and we'll be saying the same things about Ben Simmons for a while now until he gets back from his foot problems, I just think that they're in pretty good shape.
You could look up in in terms of that discussion that you and I just had, you could look up in 5 years, and those are two of the best five players in the NBA. That's not crazy to think at all. Giannis and Embiid.
No, I completely agree. And look, you're talking about two guys that are redefining their respective positions. I mean, Giannis is a 6'11 point guard, and he's more of a point guard than Ben Simmons is, and maybe more than Ben Simmons can ever be, because Giannis can do, I think, more offensively off the dribble than Ben Simmons can do. It's a little bit more explosive, perhaps, than Ben Simmons is, and is still growing into his role. And Joel Embiid is joining a growing chorus of young big men, including Porzingis, who are redefining the center position in the same way that Dirk Nowitzki redefined power forward 15 years ago. I mean, these guys are three-point shooting, off-the-dribble playing, you know, five men. And when was the last time we ever saw that? I mean, ever. I can't remember it. So, you know, these two guys are going to transcend their positions for years to come.
All right. Last thing, Mannix, you and Adrian Wojnarowski wrote that article about the Carmelo Anthony talks earlier, so I'm going to wrap this back around to this. Percentage chance Carmelo Anthony is wearing a Knicks uniform in a month?
I would say about 25% at this point. You know, the Knicks are just engaged with too many teams right now, and, you know, I'm not in those meetings, but in talking to people that have been made aware of these meetings and the substance of them, there seems to be a real aggressiveness, a proactivity, a strong desire to find a deal that works and to move on from Carmelo Anthony. He's clearly not going to be a part of long-term sustained success. That player is Kristaps Porzingis. I think the Knicks are looking for the right mix of young assets, and if they can get that, they're going to move Carmelo Anthony.
We have always known that Danny Ainge was loaded for bear and that eventually he would get a star level player with what he has. You know, he's got all of this, he's got all of these assets. How badly do you think the Celtics want him? You know what I mean? Because they would, it just all seems rather natural. Here's the team with all of these assets that you would want to get if you were moving off Carmelo. But I guess the point is, you know, is Boston really going to be willing to give something serious up in order to attain him? How badly do you think they want him?
You know, they don't want him as bad as they'd say want a Blake Griffin or one of the Golden State Quartet if they were available. So they're not going to break the bank and give up the core pieces of these assets, specifically those Nets pick to get this deal done. They do recognize that a wing scorer like Carmelo enhances their chances of winning right away, and they're hell-bent on kind of doing that at this point. But at the same time, the collective bargaining agreement, every executive out there is keenly aware of this. The collective bargaining agreement is going to make collecting stars over the next few years exceedingly difficult. You are going to either have to choose between a well-balanced team with one superstar, like Oklahoma City perhaps, or a team like Cleveland with three or four max-level stars that's fleshed out with a roster of second-round picks and minimum salary guys. And that's what's going to happen with this collective bargaining agreement. I think the Celtics are banking on, in the coming years, teams with multiple stars saying, we can't afford these guys, or we're not going to win a championship with these two guys. At that point, Danny Ainge jumps in with all his young pieces, with all his tradable assets, and gets Boston that next franchise player that they can pair with their core.
I cannot wait to see how this all plays out. Great reporting, Mannix, you're the man. Thanks, buddy.
Anytime, man.
That's going to do it for the Ringer NBA Show. If you dig what you're hearing, head over to iTunes, give us a rating and review, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. If you're playing fantasy for money and not spending hours a day doing it, you absolutely should be playing on Draft. Draft is a simple daily fantasy app where you can do snake drafts just like the ones you do at the beginning of your season-long league. There's no pros, no salary caps, and get this, your chances of winning are almost three times better than on other fantasy sites. Enter the promo code NBA Show and we will match 100% of your first deposit. Download Draft from the App Store now.